This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Holly Hauser, Executive Director, and Ref Lindmark, Board President of Puget Sound Bike Share. Holly and Ref are here today to tell us about Puget Sound Bike Share and how it will benefit the Puget Sound region. Welcome to you both.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
What is the Puget Sound Bike Share program and what is your history?
Our program, the Puget Sound Bike Share program, is a group of people that have come together to bring bike sharing to our region, to Seattle. And what bike sharing is, it's a program where we have bikes that are located throughout the community. They're parked in kiosks on the street, the sidewalk, in areas, and people can come up and check out that bike and take a short trip. And most programs in the world, the first 30 minutes is free. So most bike share trips are very short. They go from an office to a restaurant, they go to a meeting, you park the bike, and then you go into your meeting and you basically don't pay while you're in that meeting. You come back out and you take that bike and you go to another destination. So you basically put lots of bikes throughout the community, the urban environment. They're pretty densely placed. And so this network of bikes provides a sort of extra transportation option for folks. And so here in Seattle, we as a group of folks have come together to form Puget Sound Bike Share. I work for King County Metro, and for a number of years, we've been tracking bike sharing in Europe and seeing bike sharing programs throughout the United States start. So we've brought together a number of local folks, our sister cities, some companies, the University of Washington, others, and we have created Puget Sound Bike Share, and it's our goal to bring bike sharing to the area. And from Metro's point of view, we see this as another transportation option, another mobility tool, part of the network of services that are available to help people get around.
Well, you've started alluding to this, but what do you see as the goals and benefits of the Puget Sound Bike Share program?
You know, there's a ton of benefits that have been proven in a number of different cities. It's a healthy way to get around. It is that last mile connector between transit that is already existing and people's workplaces and services. It's a sustainable form of transportation. It has a very low carbon footprint. And, you know, I think it's going to go a long way to sort of change the culture of biking in our city as well and make biking safer for everybody. It's putting a lot of bikes on the streets. It's introducing folks to biking who may not typically be cyclists. And I think just biking in general, getting people on bikes really connects people to their environment more, connects people to their city more. It gives them just sort of this on-the-ground experience of being in the urban environment.
Who is likely to use bike share and for what reasons?
You know, we really see that bike share gets used by a wide variety of different types of people. Folks who commute in by bike, this is not something that's going to replace that for them. This is really going to be used by folks who maybe don't ride all the time, maybe don't even have their own bike, but want a quick way to get from place to place once they're in the city. It's going to be used by tourists that come into town. That's been seen to be successful. In Washington, D.C., 80% of their ridership are annual members. So folks who, you know, are pretty dedicated to using bike share as one of their major forms of transportation to get around.
What specific areas in the Puget Sound area will be served by the bike share program?
Well, we had a business plan done about a year ago, and that business plan recommended certain neighborhoods for phases of bike share. And basically sort of started in the most dense areas of Seattle. So phase one, we're looking at, based on the recommendation, the University District, South Lake Union, downtown, parts of Capitol Hill. So that's really where we see bike sharing being the most successful starting off, just because of the density of residences, work locations, services. And then the thought is that the system will expand outward as it gets bigger, you know, eventually ending up being 220 stations is sort of our goal, and also having some sort of satellite systems in cities like Redmond, Kirkland, Renton, the Microsoft campus.
What criteria are you using to site facilities?
There's a number of different things to look at when it comes to siting. We've been working with the city of Seattle, sort of getting them prepared for the siting exercises that are to come and starting to talk about permitting. These bike share stations can be located both on public right-of-ways and also on private land. They need to be always accessible to the public. We'll look at existing bicycle infrastructure. We'll look at existing transit locations, places that have good solar access. We're looking that these be primarily powered by solar. We'll likely be doing some sort of crowdsourcing exercises where we can get feedback from the community as to where they would like to see bike stations. But overall, they're typically located within 1,000 to 1,400 feet from each other, so 2 to 3 blocks. And the idea is that if you go to pick up a bike or return a bike and there's not anywhere to put your bike back or there's no bikes left, that you could just walk a couple blocks, pick up a bike. You'll always be able to have a bike share station within close proximity.
So, Diane, one of the things that we think about when we site bike share kiosks and where these are at is really the kind of destinations. And you need to have this network that Holly referenced need to be placed around in places where people want to go. And so that sort of dictates that it's in more of your urban environment and where, like if you were in downtown and you wanted to go to Pioneer Square. If you work in Pioneer Square and I have a meeting over by the library, and those sort of short destinations are where these bikes go, because if you can imagine during the day, they're being moved around this whole network. As you get out on the edges, you don't want a situation where the bikes all get bunched up there, because you need to have people going both directions. And so almost all of the programs in North America and Europe and all of our demand studies have indicated that we have enough places here in Seattle for these sort of destinations, and we have the kind of environment where people can ride to those places. And so it's really going to be fun. And I think referencing crowdsourcing was correct, because in a lot of cases, the actual users tell us where the best places are. And then we work with the city or whoever owns the property to find the right place for the kiosk to be placed.
What are the plans and timeline for implementation over the next few years?
So just this Monday, we released our RFP for vendor operator. So that's a huge, huge milestone for us. The next step will be bringing somebody on board, which will happen this spring. And the goal is that we launch the first phase of the system in spring of 2014. So we have work to do in terms of the funding of that from now until then. So that will be sort of our next big focus. And then, of course, working with that vendor operator to determine locations and the neighborhood and that first phase plan.
Let's step back now and take a look at the history of other bike share programs, both in the U.S. and Europe.
Well, at Metro, you know, we've been sort of watching bike sharing grow. Over the years, there were small little pilot programs that folks probably heard about. One of the first ones people lovingly call the Yellow Bike Program in Portland, where they painted bikes yellow and they put them in the community. And it was really exciting and radical at one time. And also, it wasn't sustainable because many of those bikes got stolen and were misplaced. The second sort of generation of this happened in Europe when some of the larger European cities led by Copenhagen and others, and then a very big program launched in Paris called Vélib', which really the whole world saw as being how that transformed Paris from a community that really didn't have a lot of bikes to one that is saturated with bikes. And we all looked at that lovingly and said, wow, we could do that, and wondered how to do that, and not really knowing what to do. And then a very big event took place in Montreal, a program called Bixi, where they launched their program using the solar-powered kiosks, much like a pay station unit attached to a bike docking. And what that showed us was that you didn't have to do all the infrastructure investment, that you could place these kiosks throughout the community. If they were not in a good location, you could move them. So they became very much more flexible, and you could start to imagine adapting to your town. It also lowered the cost of entry a lot. So when that happened in Montreal, most of the North American cities started a process of looking at bike sharing. How would it work in their town? The first big program was in Minneapolis, and it was very successful, followed pretty quickly by Denver, and then a big program in Washington, D.C., and then later in Boston. And today we see bike sharing in cities like Kansas City, Houston, San Antonio, and most of the West Coast cities are a little bit behind. So within the last year or so, not only our effort at Puget Sound Bike Share, but the Vancouver area is going to be launching bike sharing. Portland is going to be doing it. San Francisco Bay Area has a very big program. And even Los Angeles is going to launch bike sharing. So it starts, I think, in a small, great concept. It goes through a couple phases, and now we're at the place where it's our time here in Seattle, and we're going to do it ourselves here.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Holly Hauser, Executive Director, and Refleen Mark, Board President of Puget Sound Bike Share. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. What has made other bike share programs successful?
Well, I think that almost every place where bike sharing is launched, there's been skepticism that this idea was going to work. There are people that think all the bikes will get stolen. People think the topography is not right, or there's too much traffic, or we don't have this or that. And I think that in each of the cities, starting in Montreal and then quickly going through these other cities, when bike sharing launched and those skeptics saw how successful, what this meant to add this option to people's lives, and how people that hadn't really thought about taking a bike that day need to get somewhere, they walk out, they take a bike, they make that short trip, and they go, wow, that was pretty cool, and I'll do it again. And so every one of these cities has seen issues when they launched and then a transformative change to the sort of transportation metrics that's in the downtowns and these urban areas. And I tell people the real success of bike sharing isn't so much the first year when you launch and you get excited about it. It's what happens in the second and third year as the community validates this and says, this is correct, this is what we want. And the program expands. It infills, and then it grows neighborhood by neighborhood. And now we're seeing, even in places like Washington, D.C. and Boston, growing in suburban cities, the ring cities to these urban environments, because this mobility option, this idea about just taking a bike for short trips, it really does change things. And it really is, in a sense, very democratic. Everybody can use these things. And we now see in cities that we don't think of being bike friendly, Boston, New York, and I think you'll see here in Seattle, is being really, really successful.
To what extent has the availability of bike share programs elsewhere changed how people get around? Is there any good data on that?
There is data beginning to come out. A program in Washington, D.C. actually has done one of the best jobs of tracking not only the behavior of the people who use the program, but asking those follow-up questions like, how did you get around before bike sharing? And how did this change your life? And we're seeing that, as Holly mentioned earlier, people who hadn't historically been bike riders are bike riding not only with the bike share program. They go home and buy a bike and ride it on weekends. Original demographics started off being probably, 60% male, and now we're seeing that equalize out. We see women riding the bike share programs almost as much as men in these cities. These bikes are step-through bikes. They're durable. People don't ride short trips to get there fast. You don't need a lot of gear. There's a basket. Yeah. And so we're really seeing that people's behaviors are changing. We believe at Metro, that when you provide these kind of options, people will probably drive their car less because they can use transit for the trip that's appropriate. They can walk for short trips and they can use bike sharing and car sharing for those other trips that are appropriate. So this is bringing an option that I think will change people's behavior.
It's a great sort of spontaneous option, too. I mean, it makes so that you don't have to plan out your day around transit and worry about, if I ride my bike into work, then what if my day goes late and I can't get home and I'm stuck with my bike that I have to do something with? Just it gives you all these little options that you can piece together to have that spontaneity that a car allows that people have a hard time replacing.
What kind of safety record do bike sharing programs have?
Well, the early evidence from almost all the cities, Minneapolis, Denver, Boston, and D.C., I think, are the ones that we know best, has shown very good safety, and it's something that people are concerned about. But as I said earlier, bike share users generally aren't racing down streets. They're pretty careful, and I think there might have been one incident somewhere I remember reading a report on, but I think all the programs are pretty pleased with the way this has worked out. These are pretty safe bikes. They're sturdy bikes. They have upright handlebars. They have adjustable seats. They have lights that are built into it that always come on. They have fenders on there to keep people dry. The chain is protected. It's very utilitarian. And as we know throughout North America, that when there are more people cycling, that generally the awareness of cyclists by everybody is greater, and we see fewer and fewer accidents. And we're expecting a little or no problem here in Seattle.
And data has shown that there are far fewer accidents on bike share bikes than there are compared to just your standard bicycle.
What have been some of the challenges for other bike share programs?
I think all cities sort of have to deal with similar challenges when launching a system like this. It's a new idea, and like anything new, it takes a while for the community to learn how to use it and get used to it and accept it as sort of their own. We have a few challenges here in Seattle that are a bit unique just in terms of our topography. We have the weather challenge, but that has proven not to really be a deterrent for most other cities. And we do have the mandatory all-ages helmet law here in King County. So that is something that we are sort of approaching with high hopes of it not being a huge deterrent for the system. Vancouver, BC will be the first North American city to launch a bike share program that has the mandatory helmet law. And there are a number of helmet dispensing kiosks that are under development right now that they will be the first to use in their system. So we'll be watching them very closely, and we hope that that won't have a huge effect on our system, and we'll just sort of have to learn as we go.
Let's talk now in detail about how Puget Sound Bike Share will work. If I want to use a bike, what do I do?
Well, basically, it's a membership-based system for the most part. So you'll have the option of getting an annual membership, a monthly membership, or a 24-hour membership. So let's say you're an annual or a monthly member. You'll be able to sign up and create your membership online. There's a really robust sort of web-based interface that has mapping and all the information that you need to know. You would get some sort of card or key fob in the mail that essentially you can just walk up to any station, scan your card or stick your key fob in, pull your bike out, and ride it wherever you want to go, within that 30-minute period. If you go beyond the 30-minute period, there is a small user fee that gets charged, but you take that bike, and when you're done with it, you just drop it at any other station and you're on your way. And you can do that as many times as you want, unlimited, as long as they're under that 30-minute period. It's free with your membership fee. And the membership fees are really pretty nominal. It's incredibly affordable. We're looking at something in the ballpark of, you know, $75 for an annual membership. So it's really accessible for a lot of people.
As Holly alluded, if you were just a day user or a tourist, you didn't have an annual program, you would walk up to that kiosk, you would see some screens on there, and you would follow the instructions, including putting your credit card in there. And then that would then issue you your bike. And that day, for those 24 hours, you can use the bike share program as much as you want. And so we see folks who hadn't really thought about it. They didn't know they had a meeting. They come to work. They are not a member. They can use the bike. They sign up for that day. They take it over there. And then we think, and based on other programs, you'll do this X number of times, and then all of a sudden you'll say, this works pretty well. I think I'm going to go get the annual membership.
Like Ref has said, the bikes are really comfortable. They're really easy to use. They're very utilitarian. The only sort of moving part in terms of scaling the bike is the seat. You know, you can move it up and down to adjust to size, but otherwise, you just grab one and go, and they kind of fit everybody.
Will there be any restrictions on who can join?
Well, at the very least, as I said earlier, you know, whether you're an annual member or whether or not you're a day member, you'll need to have a credit card, because this works on the assumption that you'll bring the bike back. All the programs in North America and even in Europe have this credit card responsibility. There are issues about age, so we suspect it'll be older than 18. That's pretty much the standard across the country is 18, and I can't think of anything that would be different here. But you'd be a tourist coming here for a cruise ship during the summer or in town. You don't have to be a Seattle resident or King County or Washington resident. Anybody can use the program. Just a credit card and 18.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Holly Hauser, Executive Director, and Ref Lindmark, Board President of Puget Sound Bike Share. Would you say a bit more about how you're planning to go about providing helmets to people who rent the bikes?
Well, right now, in our RFP, we've obviously are requiring that whoever the vendor operator is comes in with a solution for helmet vending. We feel that the mandatory helmet law is really important, and we support it and don't have any intention of trying to get around that or get rid of that. We think it is definitely needed in our county. And really the idea right now is that we would have these helmet vending kiosks at every station where somebody could make a deposit, take a helmet, use it, and essentially put it back when they're finished with it, and then it would be cleaned and inspected and put back into the system. The thought, too, though, is that folks who are using the bike share program a lot, who have the annual memberships or the monthly memberships, are most likely probably going to have their own helmet that they just are carrying around. And we may work with some local businesses, Bartell Drugs or something like that, to provide low-cost helmets. So it's really easy to grab a helmet if you need one.
In the world today, in Australia, which has all helmet laws, there have been some bike share programs that have stumbled out the door a little bit with dispensing operations that really wasn't very user-friendly. So you'd go to the bike, and then you'd have to go to a different place to get your helmet. And I think in North America, and not only Vancouver and Seattle, which have law around helmets, but every program, whether they're in Boston, New York, or everywhere, would like to have helmet dispensing technology available at the bike, because there are folks who would like to use a bike-sharing vehicle who would feel much more comfortable if they had a helmet. So making the helmet available at the point when you check out the bike is critical to the success of our program. And as Holly had mentioned, you know, there are both back in the East Coast at MIT as well as some folks in Vancouver who have crafted prototypes. And these units basically are attached to the kiosk. And so when you come up to the kiosk, it'll ask you, do you have a helmet, yes or no? And if you say no, then it'll give you the option of getting a helmet from the unit. And they are adjustable helmets that are designed to fit all sizes. And then at the end of your trip, you would walk back up to that kiosk and there'll be a place to return that helmet. So we're very optimistic, and Vancouver is very optimistic, and we hope to provide some leadership to the rest of the country, because everybody would like to give people the choices in those cities.
You said a bit about this, but how much new infrastructure will be required to set up the program?
You know, the great thing about these bike share stations is they are incredibly mobile. Most of them take 2 to 3 hours to install a station. Because we're looking at having primarily solar-powered stations, they don't bolt to the sidewalk or to the street. There's no power needed. Essentially, they can be picked up and moved and put into place in a very short amount of time. They're also modular. So, you know, as time goes on, if you determine that a station has far more usership than you expected or far less, you can add on sort of 3 to 4 bike components and really scale the system as you go. So in terms of infrastructure to actually install the stations, there's really not a lot.
Well, we've seen in some of the northern cities that have winters, when the snow starts to come, the bike share kiosks are all picked up and taken to a warehouse for the winter.
How do you see bike share interfacing with public transit?
It interfaces with public transit so well, and I can say that in terms of going and using the system in D.C., where you get off of the metro and you come out of the tunnel and there's a bike station right there. So you have a choice at that point to take a bike or walk to your next destination. It really is sort of that perfect link between the forms of transportation that we already have. And I just think it very much is sort of that last piece that we need to connect everything here in Seattle in terms of transportation. We're working, and a number of cities have sort of been trying to do this, and ideally you'd be able to incorporate the bike share membership with the Orca card. And I know people ask about that all the time, and there's been a number of cities who are also trying to figure out how to do that. It's pretty tricky, and we're not there yet, but possibly at some point in the future we'll be able to incorporate that as well.
As a transit agency, Metro, we would like to give every citizen door-to-door service, and we know that's not how you build a transit network. And so one of the pieces is the last mile, and when you take a bus to some location, rarely is it your front door of where you're going. And so bike sharing provides that last piece to that trip. We also just think that at county, as sort of the mobility provider for all sorts of reasons, when car sharing started in Seattle, we looked at ways to bring car sharing and transit together, and I think we've been very successful with that. And we're expecting to have bike sharing be very much the same. We work with most of the major employers in the region. Those employers provide transportation benefits to their employees. They've already approached us and said that when the bike share program is up and running, they would like to make this part of the transportation benefits that they give their employees, including a bus pass, is access to the bike share program. Three of our major partners, Microsoft, University of Washington, and Seattle Children's Hospital, all have very strong commitments to helping people get to their campuses and get to their work site without driving a car. And this is part of their program to support that effort. And that's going to be exciting to see how that helps those neighborhoods, those communities become less car-centric.
What is being done to provide access for low-income communities?
You know, every city has been working really hard on this because they do see it as a huge need. It's sort of a work in progress. I know in D.C., one of the big issues has been the credit card requirement. People who don't have credit cards or who can't have that hold placed on their credit card while they're using the bike. So I know DC has been working with a number of community groups and social services groups to actually use their credit to place the hold on these bikes, and then folks who work with them can actually use the bike share on their credit. So that's one way that they've been working at that. A lot of it's just a matter of outreach and education to communities and being a lot more intentional, I think, with that outreach and making sure that everybody has the opportunity. I know a number of bike share programs also have reduced membership fees, reduced rates that they offer, and I can definitely imagine us doing something similar to that as well.
For me, this is real important as the, sort of the public agency here. We have seen, and we're going to expect to model, programs in Minneapolis where they partnered with some of the local corporate environments. They use Blue Cross Blue Shield because they understand the health benefits of bike sharing. And they helped the program Nice Ride Minnesota expand to communities that probably wouldn't have gotten bike share. So working together with partners in the community, you bring the program to them. And in Boston, I thought they did something that was really creative, was that they basically connected this idea about having a helmet, whether you were on the bike share program or your own bike. And so they have a large program to basically subsidize the purchase of helmets in low-income communities. And they're using that as the way to get folks to use the bike share program. So it's an effort that we'll take on here. And we've got a long history of being successful on these, and we'll do the same here.
How much will bike share cost to set up and run?
Well, based on our business plan and based on the phasing recommendations, we're looking at $3.7 million cost for the initial startup cost for the system. And then there is the operational cost per year after that, which will start in that first year around $1.4 million. So we have a ways to go in terms of raising that money. Currently, King County was recommended for a WSDOT grant of $750,000 that we are pretty sure we're going to get in the spring, so we're really relying on that. That'll be passed through King County to Puget Sound Bike Share, and that is specifically for stations and installation in the university's district. So we know for sure that that will be part of phase one to be launched in spring of 2014. And then we are working to identify and procured additional private and public foundation grants, government grants, and then also looking for corporate sponsors. We were hoping that about 50% of that $3.7 million would come in the form of a corporate sponsorship or a couple corporate sponsorships. So we're actively looking for a title sponsor, a presenting sponsor, and we're talking to folks in the community about that currently.
I think one of the things that's exciting about bike sharing in a community, in each of the cities in the country, local organizations, companies, whatever, have stepped up to be sponsors of this. And in many cases, you know, they may want their name on a bike, but in many cases, they just want to be involved in something that's really going to be transformative. So you see in places like Denver and Minneapolis and in Boston, you see healthcare organizations very active, other insurance companies or hospital chains. They want to be involved. If you're into Boston, you'll see New Balance Shoes as a major corporate sponsor to making it happen. And so we see a partnership between the private organizations helping to sponsor the launch of these programs, and then to a certain degree, using some federal grants as a way to complement that. So we're on our path for that.
Do you see the program being self-sustaining in the long run?
We do. You know, right from the beginning and based on other cities, it doesn't sustain itself in terms of the membership and the usage fees. There's a bit there that has to be supplemented by station sponsorships. It doesn't pay for the operational costs in full. But, you know, there's ways that cities have dealt with that. And there are actually some programs in North America that are profitable. Most of those are in cities where they are allowed to have advertising on their bike stations, which in Seattle we are not allowed to do at this point. But that has been a way that has made the program very easily sustain itself. But in the meantime, we're going to be looking at supplementing with sponsorships.
And what is the long-term goal of Puget Sound Bike Share?
Well, I think we're still early in understanding how bike sharing around North America will change. Regularly, we get asked in our program what's going to happen. And I think we'll see it grow in Seattle, neighborhood by neighborhood. So it's hard to imagine most of the urban neighborhoods not having bike shares in a few years. Also, our partners in Redmond and Kirkland, and we've had conversations with Bellevue, Renton, Auburn. Every city looks at their future long-range plans and asks us, can bike sharing fit into that conversation? And I think it'll be there. And there are short trips that happen in lots of urban centers. And you would not take the bike share vehicle from Kirkland to Seattle. You would use the bike share in Kirkland for trips. You would use the Seattle one. And not just a hub and spoke system, but basically a web of this program will provide mobility throughout the area.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
What excites me the most about bringing bike share to Seattle is I think it's really going to change the culture of cycling here. It's going to introduce new people to bicycling as a form of transportation. It's going to give people a new connection with their community. And I think it's really important to know that this bike share program is going to belong to the community. And it's something that we're hoping everybody embraces sort of as their own. You know, the big obstacle right now is funding the system. So that will be our next big push. And we are actively looking for folks who want to partner with us to be part of something that's going to greatly and positively impact our city.
Well, I think what makes me excited is that everybody I've talked to in other cities has told me how transformative this was, how it didn't just bring more cyclists, it changed the way people get around in the urban environment. And with Seattle and our area having the bike culture that we have, one of our partners, the Cascade Bike Club, is like got the largest number of members. This is going to continue this path of Seattle being a leader in this, and we look forward to that transformative change.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
You were just listening to Holly Hauser, Executive Director, and Reflyn Mark, Board President of Puget Sound Bike Share. For more information, check on the web at PugetSoundBikeShare.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.